We're holding on Chafalas on the base, two lines from the bottom. In the middle of, the Mishnah had told us, that's Rabbi Yeshua had told us, that there's four types of people that are Mevale Olam. They wear out, they destroy the world. That's a work up for Asher. We Chassid Shoita, we talked about yesterday, the character who sees, for example, a woman drowning and says it's not theistic to look at her and save her, or Tosfos mentioned a case of a person who sees a kid drowning and says, let me take off my tefillin first. Then we started talking about it's at least ostensibly a certain midas chassidus, but it's a chassidus shoshkos. But yeah. Anyway, the second category we had was Rosha Arum, and we started going a conniving Rosha, and we started going through several possibilities of what that means. And we went through five of them so far. Rav Yosef Achama Amar of Sheshes Zamachria Acherim Ba'Urchosav. This is someone who inclines other people to his ways. So what does that mean? Rashi says it means this is the kind of person who tells other people, you know, whatever I do, follow what I do. And, well, the point is, in other words, he's making himself like he's this great chassid, everybody should follow what he's doing. Meanwhile, why is he doing that? In order that people won't start checking carefully and realize what kind of a lowlife he is. That's what Rashi says. Marsha talks about a different possibility that Machriya Acherim Barachosav is talking about somebody who gives other people advice which winds up being good for him, not necessarily so good for them. So he's a Rosha Orum, but he's being conniving about it. Well, it's a different kind of hypocrite, though. Then other Mephoshim talk about other possibilities. Ian Yaakov talks about something a little bit similar to Marsha. Machriach Erem Baruch Ochosav literally means his ways. So imagine, for example, you had a person, let's say, who walked on a not very well-used road and ended up tripping because it was a rough road. So what does he do? He convinces other people, you know what, that's a good road to go on. That way, you know, instead of he having to be embarrassed, I'm the only yokel who went on that and tripped. You know, now I have other people who did the same thing. And it's Yosef brings a fourth possibility. Amachriya Acherim Baruch Yosef means somebody who judges other people according to the way he himself is. He himself has certain bad midas, so he sees those in other people, for example. Reb Zrika Amar Rav Huna, we had four before, actually, this was the fifth one. Reb Zrika Amar Rav Huna, Zamekel Asmer Machmer L'Acherim. It's also a person who is Mekel in Halacha for himself, but Machmer for other people. There's a Rosh Arum, either is the Rosh part the fact that he's being Mekel for himself, is the Rosh part the fact that he's being Machmer for other people, whatever it is, it's the wrong thing to do. Ula Amar, Zesh Karim V'Shana, this Rosh Arum is somebody who learned Tanakh, and learned Mishnayot, v'loishimish Tamir Chachamim, but he did not serve Tamir Chachamim. So Rashi says Shimish Tamir Chachamim means that he did not learn what we discussed the other day is called what the Gemara had called the other day Svara. What we nowadays call Gemara, the inner discussion, the reasons behind the halachas and the Mishnayot. It's essential. So because the point is otherwise for you know the basic halachas that it says in Mishnayos, but you have no way of applying you end up misapplying them. You don't realize, for example, Rashi points out, for example, you have that sometimes let's say you'll have a Mishnah which the Gemara will explain is only a daf yachid. You can't pass the point here. But a person who hasn't shimish tamar chachamim is gonna think that you can. Other times the Gemara will explain that a din in the Mishnah only applies in a certain limited circumstance, etc. All that sort of thing is all included. Tosfos Shantz gives a different idea of Shimush Tamar Chachamim, that it means exactly what it sounds like, literally serving Tamar Chachamim, as in actually doing things for them, bringing them water, bringing them whatever, and that way you also end up learning from their midas. You're close to them and you learn from their midas. Somebody who does not do that, somebody who may have learned the actual stuff, but he doesn't have that close relationship with Tamar Chacham, that's what we're calling him a Rosha Arum. Why is he he's a Rosha? Because he hasn't learned Torah fully the way he should. He's Arum, he's conniving, a tricky Rosha, because people don't realize that he's not what he seems to be. People see that, oh, you know, he knows all these halachas, he must be this great Tamar Chacham, and they don't realize that he doesn't understand how to apply them. Yeah. So in that connection, the Gemara says Itmar, they said a discussion as follows. Somebody who learned Tanakh and learned Mishnayot but was not Mishamish Tamar Chachamim, according to either of the different explanations we just said. Meaning either like Rashi says learning Gemara or really serving, yeah. Rabbi Lozo Imaharis Amaharat. Okay, he's an Amaharat, which means so Rashi says that means that, for example, you suspect him of not being careful with Meiser, as the famous thing about Demai. We suspect that he's not careful with Tumah Tara. Rav Shmuel Menachmeni Omar, Hareza Bur. not only an Ama Aref, at least an Ama Aref, a boor is worse than an Ama Aref. An Ama Aref, at least, is somebody, you know, an Ama Aref is somebody who may not know the halachas, but at least he has decent midas. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani is saying beyond that, he's a boor. He's somebody who doesn't even have good midas. No, boor doesn't mean that. No, boor means, boor, the word boor literally means like an unplowed field, like a field that's just left fallow. And no, that's a boor in English. This is in Hebrew, boor, means vavret. Yeah. So a sada boor means an empty field, one that's not plowed, not planted, not nothing. That's just laying fallow over there, lying fallow over there. So that's this person is not even at the level of an amaret. He's at the level of a boor. You know, in the opposite, it says, you know, in boor yarechet v'la amaret chasid. A boor is not able to be a yarechet because if he doesn't even have good midas, how is he going to not do averus? An amaret maybe can be a yarechet, but he can't be a chasid. He can't go with nimshur of the din because he doesn't know the din. Similar idea over here. Rabbi Yana is a kusi. Rabbi Yana goes even beyond that. He's like a kusi. Meaning, therefore, Rashi says, he'll be also to eat his bread or his wine. Why? Because if he's not going to the trouble of being mishamash tachat chachamim, then it means he doesn't really care about what the chachamim are teaching. Whatever he learned in order to show off as a tamar chacham. So therefore, we have to suspect his kashrus, basically. Rav Nachman bar Yaakov is a mogush. He's a machashif. He's a mogush is from the same source as the English word magician. So he's like a magician. He's putting on a show and he's putting on a show in front of people. Well, mumbling the Gemara is going to say in a second. Actually, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov is not talking about the mumbling aspect, but rather Rashi says he's like showing off. He's putting on a show for the benefit of the public, and meanwhile, you know, all he's doing is a sleight of hand and whatever. Yeah. It's logical to say, like what Rav Achav Yaakov says, that this person is like a mogush. The Amri Inshi, because there's an expression people say, Rotin Magushav Layodimai Omer, the mogush mumbles, chants, and he doesn't know what he's chanting, so like magician, you know, abracadabra, hocus pocus, you know, all this mumbo jumbo that they say that they don't know what it means. Similarly, Toni Tana Vlayodamai Omar. Similarly, you have a Tana, not a Tana as in the Tanoim of the Mishnah, but Tanoim as in a Tana as in the ones in the yeshivas of Amaroyim whose job it was to repeat over the Mishnayos and Braisos that they could then discuss. These people were sort of, in that sense, they were sort of like a living collection of Braisos. But a lot of times, sometimes some of them were great Tamar Chachamim in their own right. But some of them were just Toni Tana Vlayodamai Omar. The Tana teaches, but he doesn't know what he's saying. He just, like, he memorized the words, but without really understanding the reasoning behind it. So in that sense, he's like a mogush mumbling his charms and his spells and not knowing what they really mean. In Megillah, also, the Gemara mentions that there was one time a younger man passed away who knew a lot of Braitis by heart. Maybe he was one of these official Tanoim, maybe not, whatever. So he knew a lot of Braitis. They wanted to make a hesped for him. So I think it's Rava says that in the Gemara, what kind of hesped are you going to say? Like a basket full of books. He just died, son of Amali Safri. Like, in other words, he had a lot of books in him, sure, but did he have any real actual learning like we're discussing over here? No. Very ironically, that expression sounded very ironically, sounded Amali Safri is used nowadays as a title of respect for great Tamar Chachams. Sana de Moli Safri, a basket full of books. So nowadays they use it in a complimentary sense, like a person who knows a lot, but the Rava originally meant it over there as a derogatory thing, yeah.
Like a computer.
Sort of, yeah. Maral explains that the progression over here that we have is something along the lines of, again, the Amaretz at least has a certain Milo, the Bur is even less than that, the Kusi is somebody why does he Bechlau keep Torah? Just because, you know, he learned it from his ancestors. Like the Kusi, the Gemara mentioned in various places, there were certain halakhas that they kept very carefully, but a lot of others they were careless with, like just whatever they inherited from their ancestors without really understanding the reasoning behind it. And then the Mogush is at an even lower level, and that's where Rav Achav Yaakov saying that a person who is not shimish tamar chachamim is on the level of a mogush, where bechlal there's not even any seichel involved, because magic is totally anti seichel.
There's a lot of people even today like.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, actually, what we're going to mention soon, actually, that the Gemara is going to mention soon that a person that people who pass in halacha only based on the Mishnah on the Mevale Olam, they're among the people who wear out and destroy the world, and Marsha says that includes people who pass in straight from the Shulchan Aruch. Because the Shulchan Aruch was originally, before the Shulchan Aruch came along with the Mefarshim, before it had all the Mefarshim, it was basically, in many ways, it was like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. In many ways, it was like the Mishnayot. It gave the halachas, but without all the give and take and underlying reasoning. Which, in fact, Pitzchet Tshuva says nowadays, in answer to what Maharsha says nowadays, that we have all the Noisik Kalim, you have the Taz and the Shach and the Magen Avraham and this and that's different. Because now, Taka, you have on the page over there, you have all the give and take and all the background information. Which actually, I mean, that is actually how the Pirushim on Shulchan Aruch first came to be written in the first place. The Smith, Sefer Miras Einayim on Choshen Mishpat, writes in his introduction that when he was very unhappy over the fact that the Shulchan Aruch came out, people are going to use it as a substitute for going to a Rav, or as a substitute for proper learning. But eventually he saw, as he's getting later in life, he sees, you know, look, people are starting to use it, and more, you know, Litvei Sarabim Yota, he says, you know, okay, at least let's make, you know, the lesser of two evils. Then look, if it's a choice between people are going to use the Shulchan Aruch without anything, you know, then at least, if they're going to use it, then fine, at least let's write a pirush to explain the background behind the halachas and when the halachas. He was originally against it, but then he realized, you know what, at least the next best thing, at least, is to write a pirush on it. And he intended to write on all four halachim of Shulchan Aruch, in the end he only wrote on Choshen Mishpat. But then other G'dayli Yisrael of that other Talmud Chachamim of that and the following two generations wrote the rest of the standard Perushim that we have, Magen Avraham and Taz, even in the 1600s, it would be late 1500s, early 1600s. The Shulchan Aruch first came out in the 1560s. Okay. Tanan Rabbanan. Ezeu Amoharet. What is the definition of an Amoharet? Kol she'enu koda krishma shachat va'abit v'v'chaytzeha. If he doesn't say krishma morning and evening together with its brachas. So there's a number of different Beforeshim talk about why that makes them an Amoharet. One of them, Maharsha talks about, is in Menachos, the Gemara says in Menachos, that technically a person can fulfill their absolute minimum chiyuv of limud atorah by saying Shema in the morning and Shema at night. It is, you're at least saying words of Torah. The Gemara says, you shouldn't tell this to an Amoharet, because then he's going to think he can get away with just saying Krishma. Anyway, the point is, this person who doesn't even say Krishma in the morning and evening, therefore, he really is an Amoharet, and he's packing not learning at all. Divir Meir, Vachamim, Kol Shein Maniach Tefillin.
Are we talking about Krishma Mita?
No, we're talking about Krishma in the morning, by Shacharis, and then at Meirav, yeah. Vachamim, because by night you don't say with Bibir Chaser, anyway, by night you don't say with the Bracha. By Krishma Shalmetani. But Chumim Kol Shein Maniach Tefillin. The Chumim say that an Amoharet is defined as somebody who doesn't wear tefillin. By the way, both Tosfos and Tosfos Shant discuss over here at some length that there are actually different definitions of Amoharet in many different places in Shas. You have the definition of an Amoharet as far as the dinim of Maestris and Dimai. You have an Amoharet as far as the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. You have an Amoharet as far as that you can't accept Eidus from him and so forth. So which exact ones the Gemara is talking about over here, that's they discuss that at some length. Which actually Ben Yoyada says, that's if we say that it's the matter of Eidus, the person who doesn't say Shema, Shachos V'Avis V'Bechosel, meaning he's not giving Eidus, that the Eivishter created the world and that he's one Eivishter. Therefore, appropriately enough, he's possible Eidus. Or if he doesn't wear tefillin, meaning he says Shema but he doesn't wear tefillin, like it says in the Siddur, Meir Eidus Shekha Ba'atma, it's like he's saying false witness, the Eivishter says wear tefillin and he's not wearing it. So again, therefore, he deserves to be possible Eidus. Ben Azar im kol shein letzitzis bebigdo, if he doesn't have tzitzis on his clothing. Rab Yonasan ben Yosef im kol sheyesh le'ba'om, kol sheyesh le'bonim ve'enim gadlan lumud Torah, if he has children and does not raise them to learn Torah, then he's defined as an Amoharet. Acherim, and then Acherim say, which here is another example, by the way, we have Rab Meir and then Acherim, which means, again, you, Tosfos Shantz points out, as we had earlier in the Masechta, that usually Acherim is Rab Meir, but sometimes we find where you have Rab Meir and then you also have Acherim. So Acherim may mean a shitter that Rab Meir learned from Acher, as opposed to his own opinion. Anyway.
I always put the same in first to Rab Meir.
Acher is Rav Meir's teacher, Elusha ben Avuya, who later was called Acher. So yes, that Tosfos was mentioned earlier in the Masechta, and on Daf Yud Gimel, that maybe wherever it says Acherim Oimrim, and usually Acherim Oimrim means Rav Meir, maybe it means this is something that Rav Meir learned from Acher, as opposed to when it calls him Rav Meir by his name, it means it's his own shit. It is also, the story, that's why Rav Meir gets called Acherim. The story in Horius over there where a mayor and Rav Nosson tried to have Rav Shimon Gamliel deposed as Nazi. So we'll get to it in a couple of years' time. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Even if somebody learned Tanakh and learned Mishnayos, but is not Mishamish Tamar Chachamim, according to either of the definitions we said before, Zeu Amaretz. And they continue, Karav Olay Shana, if somebody learned Tanakh but did not learn Mishnayos, there is a Bur. Then as we hear Bur, which as we said, a Bur is lower than an Amaretz. Loy Karav Olay Shana, what if he hasn't learned Tanakh and he hasn't learned Mishnayos, he hasn't learned anything at all? All of our cult of Omer on such a person, the Pasuk says, V'zeraytiyah Sbeis Yisrael Sbeis Yehuda, Zera Adam Zera Behemah. The Ebeshah says, I will plant within the Jewish people and within the Shevet Yehuda, the children of man and the children of animals. So somebody like who hasn't learned anything is on the level of an animal in that sense, because he's not using his brain. The Ebeshah gave him a brain to understand the Torah, and he's not using it for that. Okay. Yeah. The Pasuk mentions, the Pasuk in Mishlei that goes, Yiroas Hashem b'nei v'melech, my son, fear Hashem and the king, v'im shonim al tis'ara. Don't get involved, don't mix yourself up, don't get involved with shonim. What does shonim mean? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Elish shonim halachas. It means people who study only halachas. So again, they weren't mishamash tamar chachamim, so they learned the halachas, they learned the basic mishnayas, but they didn't learn the reasons, the time of halachas, and the whole give and take, the whole svara and everything.
True,
but there's also, you need to know the halachas, but you also need to know the give and take behind them, is what we're saying over here. So, but you have people who only learn halachas, is not such a good thing.
In other words, just roadshow.
Yeah, basically just roadshow, yeah, exactly. So the question is, pshita. Well, of course, I mean, isn't that, of course, what else would the pasuk mean? The answer is, ma'udatema shonim b'chet. Because you might think to say that maybe the word shonim in the pasuk actually has a different meaning. Shonim, meloshon, they repeat during an avera. V'chidur Rav Huna. And then the pasuk would be telling us, like what Rav Huna says. D'amar Rav Huna, kivin sha'ava adam avera v'shonava, hutraloi. Rav Huna says that if a person does an avera and then repeats it again, it becomes mutter to him, which the Gemara mentions in a few places, in Yoma and some other places. Usually in the other places, the Gemara mentions, hutra sakadai. That's what he means, it became mutter to him. It means not to slay tehetri. He feels like it's already something mutter. So therefore, maybe you would think the pasuk is teaching us, im shonim al tis'ara, don't be involved with people who are repeating the same avera. Kamash Malan, that is why Rabbi Yitzchak is telling us that's not what the pasuk means. So what's it? I mean, what's with the Gemara's pshitus that it means the first thing, and why can't it mean the second thing? A couple of different proposals talk about the possibilities over here. One of them is that what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, the pasuk can't mean what Rav Huna is saying, don't get involved with people who are shonim b'chet, because adrabba, get involved with them, help them do tshuva. Mashenkin, if you say that it means the shonim halachas, then we're saying that, then we're saying, yeah. Also, Marshall talks about the idea that this pasuk is it's in Mishlei. Mishlei is written by Shlomo HaMelech. If he's saying Yiroas Hashem b'ni, must be he's talking to his son Rechavam. Yiroas Hashem b'ni v'melech. Fear Hashem, my son. You're going to be the king. Therefore, as a king, you have a responsibility to make sure that you know the Torah properly. Therefore, be him shonim al tis'ara. Don't get involved with the shonim, with the people who only learn halacha. Tana, we learn in a braita, Hatanoyim Vale Olam. The Tanoim wear out the world. What do you mean? How do they wear out the world? What's the problem? Because, as we said before, they pass in halacha based on their Mishnayos. They learn the Mishnayos, so Marshall says they learn the basic Shulchan Aruch without the Noitzer Kalim, and therefore they think they know the halacha without realizing again that sometimes you have a Mishnah that's a Das Yachid, sometimes you have a machlokes in the Mishnah itself, and you don't know who the halacha is supposed to be like. You have a Mishnah that only applies to certain cases. Incident, the Alpha actually brings an interesting thing in Kuntras Achron in Hilchos Talmud Torah, in one of the Kuntras Achron, the Alpha Debbie discusses. So what about, for example, I mean, what did the Rambam do? He wrote a Sefer Halachos, and he designed it to be that you can pass in halacha from it, what he writes in his introduction. It's supposed to be that a person can learn Tanakh and then go straight to the Mishnah Torah and nothing else is needed in between.
Also,
the Torah has a lot of the give and take behind the halachas. The Torah was also a little controversial in his time, but not nearly as much as the Rambam was in his time.
Why was it controversial?
Because basically, based on this, what are you, you're wearing out the world. Anyway, so what is the taka? What was the Rambam's shita? Given our Gemara over here, so the Alter Rebbe explains, because there's two different issues involved. Rashi is mentioning over here two different issues involved when you're learning only Mishnayos. One is that you may not understand the reasons behind them, that you may not understand the reasons for the halacha and therefore know how to apply the halacha correctly. The other thing is, Rashi is mentioning that you have gaf yochid, you have all kinds of different things where you don't know who the halacha is like, etc. So the Alter Rebbe explained that the Rambam took the view that all Gemara is saying the main problem is the second thing. Therefore, what did the Rambam do in the Yad HaChazaka? He made it clear what the halacha is in each case. He mentions in his introduction, I'm not going to mention this opinion and that opinion, I'm just going to give the straight halacha. So therefore, at least when it comes, it's true. You may not be able to, having learned the Rambam, you may not be able to paskin halacha in related cases from it because you won't know the underlying reasons for that. You're going to have to learn the Gemara in order to be able to be Madama Milsa La Milsa and know what the halacha is in other cases that the Rambam doesn't describe. But at least for the cases that he does describe, the Rambam would hold that's not what the Gemara here is objecting to. Because as long as you have a clear halacha in front of you, then it's not like the Mishnayos where you don't have the clear halacha always. Then the Mishnah continued.
Not everybody can understand the Gemara.
Well, okay, I mean, so if you don't know the halacha, so you know what? I mean, there has always been this going back and forth. You know, you had the, you know, what happened? You know, the Mishnayos were originally meant to be to summarize the halachas, but then you need the Gemara on it. The Rif came and wrote and wrote his Sefer halachas, which we call the Rif, and that was controversial in its time also because he takes out a lot of the give and take of the Gemara, and eventually you started having Mefarshim, and then you start having objections. The Baal Amor wrote a bunch of objections to the Rif. The Ravid goes and defends him, but then has his own objections. The Ramban goes and then defends the Rif against those. Then later on comes the Rambam, and you have the whole give and take on that, and eventually the Mefarshim on the Rambam. You have this constant thing. In each generation, you have, or every couple of generations, you'll have somebody who comes up with a summary of the halachas for the average person to be able to learn from. And then, you know, it's controversial for a while and it's time. Eventually they start writing Pirushim on it and Pirushim on the Pirushim and whatever. And eventually you need something else to summarize it again. That's the Alter Rebbe's sons, the Mitzel Rebbe and his brothers describe in their introduction to the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch that that's basically how the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch came into being also. I mean, you know, 200 years since the Mechaber wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Meanwhile you have the Taz and the Shach and the Magen Avraham and the Smeh and so forth, and it's hard to figure out what the bottom line halacha is. So the Mizrachi Maggid tells the Alter Rebbe, I want you to write a new version of the Shulchan Aruch that will include the halachas together with the reasons. Therefore, you won't have the problem that we're mentioning over here, paskening halacha from the Mishnayos, because you will have the whole give and take, but at the end of it, you'll have the bottom line. What's the halacha? The halacha is like this opinion, or the halacha is like that opinion? And that way you'll have the best of both. As opposed to the Rambam, for example, who doesn't bring the various opinions.
Right.
Hello?
What about the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch?
So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is another kind of thing. Yeah, there you just have the halachas without the reasons, and therefore paskening halacha from Shulchan Aruch is not really such a great idea either. Yeah.
Yeah, it was praised.
It's praised because, again, the average person at least can understand the basic halachas from it. But to use it to paskin halacha, no. Let's continue. The Mishnah had mentioned the next case that is Mevalei Olam, of people that destroy and wear out the world, is Isha Purusha Vagomer, a woman who is a Purush, who abstains, who like a frumtel lady, let's say. Tanan Abonim, we learn in Braisa, Vesula Tzalyonis, a Vesula, an unmarried girl who's constantly davening, Balaf Tvila, Rashi says, Almana Shevavis, or an Almana who is Shevavis. Rashi says that Shevavis is related to the word in Aramaic, the word for neighbors is Shivavi. So Shevavis is an Almana who's always going around and visiting her neighbors. And a child who has not come to full term, what that means the Gemara will explain later. These are also, they wear out the world. Why? Rashi says, because all these cases are people who are really under, behind the scenes, they're doing all kinds of avedas, noya person, machashkwiz, or whatever, but they pretend to be tzitkanias, and that way they figure nobody will check up on them.
How do we know this?
We don't know for sure, obviously, but we're saying you can have, in other words, when you see a Besula Tzalyonis, or Amona Shevavis, that's what we said yesterday, you need a little orma, you need a little slyness to be able to see whether this is really everything that it seems to be. Is that so? We actually learn an important detail about Yireschet from a Besula who davened, the kibble, and we learn an important detail about receiving reward from the Edishna from Mitzvah from an Amana who used to go around, who used to walk around. Well, not visit the shul, we'll say in a second, but yeah. Incidentally, the Salmon Shevov is the Aruch has a different, as it brings a different explanation, I think, from Nissim Goin. He says Shevov is Moloshin Tshuva. This is an Almona who claims, you know what, I'm an Almona, I used to be married, now though you know, my husband died, I've done Tshuva, and I've sworn off, I'm not going to have anything to do, I'm never going to get married again, I'm going to live my whole life ala Torah of ala Avoda. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, she's being Mizana and figuring that, you know, she's putting on a face of, yeah. So anyway, what are the cases? Yirachet mebesola. We learn a case of Yirachet from the case of besola. The Rabbi Yechanan shomalahi besola. Rabbi Yechanan once heard a certain besola, a certain unmarried girl. The naflal apa. She was falling on her face to daven tachnun. The kamra, and she was saying, Rabbanu shalom. Barasa gan eden, barasa gehenim. You created gan eden, you created gehenim. Barasa tzedikim, barasa rishayim. Therefore, Yehiratin, so there are Rishayim in this world, there is a Gehenim. Yehiratin, Melchanecha Shalei Kashla Bibnei Adam. It should be your will that people should not stumble through me, that you shouldn't have, that there are people who, because of me, end up losing their place in Gan Eden and wind up in Gehenim. What do we mean? Either we're talking about people who are going to be attracted by her beauty and may rape her or whatever, or we're talking about, Ben Yoyada talks about the idea that maybe we're talking about people who are proposing marriage to her, where therefore, you know, okay, they have to go out with her on a date, they see what she's like, but they may start getting improper hirurim from her, so therefore she's davening that should be avoided. So we see, we learn an important detail about Yiras Chet from that not only you should daven that you yourself should be saved from Averis, but that also other people shouldn't be brought to Averis through you. And they say, there you have a besula who's tall yonis, who's davening, and we see that's a good thing. Kibul schame almona, well, the bride, actually, yeah. Kibul schame almona, and where do we see an example of receiving reward? Where do we see an example from an almona? Dahi almona dahavoy beit knishta b'shevusa. There was a certain almona where there was a shul in her neighborhood, but kol yoyim havas oz pas ho matzah be medrash edir Rabbi Yechanan. But every day she used to come and daven in Rabbi Yechanan's vis medrash. Amalai, he said to her, Biti, my daughter, don't you have a shul in your neighborhood? What are you schlepping all the way here? Amrele, she said to him, Rebbe, don't I have the extra reward for the extra steps to the shul? So therefore, we see, so we learn from her about Kibul Schar. We learn over here that you're doing something, you're doing the mitzvah in a better way and getting extra schar for it. Which actually, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, this idea of schar. Yeah, there is an idea called Ein Ma'avir Na'al Mitzvah, that if you have a chance to do a mitzvah, you shouldn't bypass it to do something else. But in this case, going to daven in a further away shul, which involves schar tzviyas, itself is the greater hiddur mitzvah. And therefore, the Chacham Tzvi writes in one of his shuvas that therefore, that's our Gemara is saying, that's a valid reason to bypass the local shul and go to a further away one. Anyway, so why are we calling out the Basula Talyonis Valmona Shevavis? If Rabbi Yochanan have found examples of both of them that are good, the answer is Kikama Kagan Yochanid Bas Yotivi. You're right. You know what our Mishnah means though, or what the Braisa means actually, when it mentions the Basula Talyonis Valmona Shevavis, we're talking about somebody like Yochanid Bas Yotivi. Who was she? Rashi says she was an Almona who secretly was a Machshefa, a witch. So when a woman in her neighborhood was about to give birth, she would use a spell to prevent her from being able to have a baby. So she'd be having tremendous labor pains. After a while, this Yochanan would come. You know, obviously nobody knew that she caused the whole thing behind the scenes. She would go and say, you know, I'm a rachmonas on this lady, let me go daven for her, and then maybe the Eivishter will accept my tefillah. So she goes, undoes her spells, and the baby's able to be born. Continues Rashi, that one time she had somebody working in her house, doing a contracting job or something in her house. She had gone to a woman who was giving birth, again, to pretend to be Tzadekus who's going to daven for her. This worker over there heard in a keli in her house where she used for her kishur, he heard knocking noises from it. So he didn't know what it was. He went and opened it up, and all the kshofim flew out, and the baby was able to be born. Meaning, usually she would go and take off the cover and then let the shadim or whatever it is that she keeps in this jar out. So in this case, the worker unwittingly did that, and therefore everybody found out what she really was. But not, for example, not a regular, not necessarily a solo who davens, like we saw from Rav Yochanan, and not necessarily an almona who just goes around to the neighbors, not necessarily in and of itself is that a bad thing.
A real machshefa like that.
But a machshefa like that, yeah. Tosfos mentions from the Yerushalmi a different girsa over here. Instead of Bistula Salyonis, the Yerushalmi brings Bistula Simonis. Simonis Moloshan Sodom. She fasts a lot. So what happens? Either that she's ruining her health by fasting a lot, which is not appropriate, or that she later on, this Basula eventually gets married, her husband finds she has no Basulim. Well, why not? She says, because I've been fasting all this time, and that weakened my health and caused me to lose my Basulim. Meanwhile, really, what was she doing? She was fooling around and lost her Basulim that way. We said before in the Braisa, we said, my cousin shall I call a chadasha. We mentioned a child who hasn't come the full term. What does that mean? Chochatagimu, here in Babel, they translate, they explain that it means the Tamar Chacham Amavayit Benabosav. It means the Tamar Chacham who kicks against his Rebbes, who rejects the authority of his Rebbes. So he's learned a little Torah, and therefore he figures, like, you know, now I know more than my Rebbe's kind of thing. And Rashi mentioned why is he called Katan Shalakol Lechadoshim, because he ends up, the Gemara mentioned, we learned in Chagiga last year, that such a person ends up having his life shortened. So therefore he's like a child who's born prematurely and doesn't survive. Rahman al-Islam. Rab Abba Amar, the Talmud Shleigia Lahiro Umoda. This means a Talmud who is not yet of the age or the knowledge to be able to teach halacha and paskin halacha, but he goes and does that. So therefore, again, he's like a child who's born prematurely. He's not ready. Eventually, he'll grow up and be ready for it, but not yet. To Amar Rab Abba Amar Rab Huna Amar Rab, my dichtiv ki rabim chalolim hipila v'atzumim kol aruge. What does it mean? A pasuk in Mishle that says for many she's knocked down many corpses and numerous are the ones that she's killed. And the simple meaning of the pasuk is it's talking about Rashi says Isha Zara, about a promiscuous woman. But we're darshining it over here about a Talmud Chacham who doesn't act the proper way is like that also. He also deserves those epithets. So what does it mean? Kigabim chalolim ipila. She's caused many corpses. That tamat chacham shleigia lahirahu murder. This refers to a tamat chacham who is not yet of the age or the knowledge to be able to paskin halacha, but is doing that. So therefore, so ipila lashen nefel shleigolay chadashav. Again, he's like a stillborn baby. But assuming kol aruga, and when the pasuk continues, many are all of the ones she killed. That Tamar Chacham, she gielahirah ve'enim murder. This is the other way around. This is Tamar Chacham who is able to teach, who is able to pass in, who is able to teach, but does not. But he does not want to. He holds it back for himself. So what's the bar? Tatsumim. Now she says, Loshen oitzim enim, but he closes his mouth. And therefore, many people end up suffering from it. He should be giving out the knowledge that he has and helping people, especially the Rambam points out what happens if the Talmud Chacham, who is able, Shehigia Lahira, if he refuses to take on the job of Paskin Halacha, what's going to happen? He's leaving the field open for all kinds of other people who don't know. So therefore, he's causing a great amount of harm. Yeah. Up until what point? Meaning Rashi says, at what age is a person suitable, is a person able to start giving harah, to be able to start teaching and passing halacha? Adab boin shnin, 40 years old. Question in any, but we find that Rabba taught at a much younger age. He only lived, Rashi says, the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah, he only lived 40 years. He was a Rosh Hashiva, the Gemara mentions in a few places that Rabba was a Rosh Hashiva for 22 years. So if he lived only to 40, it means he became a Rosh Hashiva long before 40. The Sefer Dodos that are showing him on Jewish history has a long discussion on this. He wants to argue based on various Gemaras that Rabba actually lived to be 60. But even so, if he was Rosh Hashiva for 22 years, it means he became Rosh Hashiva at 38, so before 40. I know there's a lot of give and take about whether it's Rabba or Rava that's the one who lived 40 years, and whether it really is 40 years or 60. A lot of give and take among various historians. Anyway, the answer is Beshavin. That's if he's equal, Rashi says, "Im shava legadol le'ir b'chachma." If he's equal in knowledge to the city rav, for example, in chachma, then he's allowed to pass in halacha. Or if there's nobody more senior than him in the city. So Rabba, he was a Rosh Hashiva at a young age, 18 or 38, as the case may be, because there was nobody greater than him available, basically. Or he was equal to everybody else who was available.
What is that?
Meaning, in other words, exactly that. So, like, in other words, if you have a if he's below 40 years old, if there's somebody who, if there's somebody else available who knows more, who knows at least as much as he does, then that person should be passing halacha for the that person should be the rav, not this below 40. But if there's nobody else, then
by default, then.
Tosfos discusses a little differently, but actually the 40 years, we're not talking about 40 years of age. We actually have to be talking about, Tosfos mentions the famous thing that a person doesn't fully understand his Rebbe's opinion until 40 years. Doesn't mean when he's 40 years old, that means 40 years from when he began learning. So in that case, not 40 years old like Rashi says, but 40 years from whenever he began learning by his Rebbe. There's a sikha in Chelek Lama Galad where the Rebbe goes through the pros and cons of Rashi and Tosfos' shittas. Basically, the Rebbe explains that Rashi takes the view, the main thing is the person has to have an inborn bina, ben aboyim bina, which is a matter of when he turns 40 years old. He needs to have learned by his Rebbe in order that his Rebbe teaches him the right thing, that he doesn't go on the wrong path. But basically, he needs to have that inborn bina, which comes at 40, whereas Tosfos takes the view. The more important thing is you have to have the Kabbalah from your Rebbe, which is, as the Gemara, the Tosfos quote says, it takes 40 years of learning by a Rebbe to accomplish that. The Tosfos says you'd have to be older than 40. You have to be 40 from when you started learning. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Incidentally, I mean, as far as Rabba, Rav Shura Goyen actually mentions in his Igeris that Rabba became the Rosh Hashiva after Rav Yehuda was Nifter. He took over as Rosh Hashiva of Pompadisa. But he says for many years he didn't really want to take on the Rosh Hashiva ship. He led the Yeshiva sort of unofficially, but he didn't officially want to take it on until Rav Chista had passed away about 10 years later. Then finally he accepted, there's nobody else in that generation as great as him, and therefore he accepted it. That fits well with our Gemara over here. He was less than 40 years old. So he wasn't going to accept it as long as Rav Chista or anybody else is capable of doing it. If it's Rava, then he was the son-in-law of Rav Chista. No, but if it's Rava, then Rava was Rosh Hashiva many years later. He was after Rava and after Rabbi Yosef and after Abaya, then came Rava. So yeah.
Any parallel with the Rebbe?
Could be, but the Rebbe was over 40. Was over 40, but yeah. Right. Okay. All right. For Makis Prushin, Hula, then we mentioned the fourth thing the Mishnah had mentioned, that's the Mavali Olam, that wear out the world, is Makis Prushin, the wounds of Prushin. Now, Prushin, it basically means the Chachamim. But our Gemara is going to be using it more in a more derogatory sense. So you have in English, you have the expression Pharisees. It comes from that. Like, Prushim, as the Gemara is going to talk about over here, are more like people who, hypocrites, basically, who put on a show of being great Talmid Chachamim and from Jews, but under the covers, not necessarily so much. So turn it up on them. We learn it up right. Shiva Prushim, and there are seven types of Prushim. And Parush Shichmi, and the Gemara will define all them, Parush Shichmi, Parush Nixi, Parush Kizoi, Parush Meduchya, Parush Machai Vasi Ve'asena, Parush Me'ava, Parush Me'ira. Let's define them. Parush Shichmi, Zeh Oitze Maite Shechem, means somebody who acts like the people of Shechem. What did they do? After Shechem had kidnapped and raped Dinah, so that he and the whole rest of the people of the city went and mauled themselves, but not L'shem Shemayim. Therefore, Parush Shichmi is somebody who's doing mitzvahs for his own benefit, that people should honor him. For example, Rashi says, not L'shem Shemayim. Tosfos quotes a number of these have different definitions in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi also brings up Braisa in the next paragraph and gives different definitions for a bunch of them. Parush Shichmi, the Yerushalmi says, is Meloshon Shechem, meaning a shoulder. So therefore, Parush Shichmi is like somebody who ostentatiously carries his mitzvahs on his shoulder. Like you see him walking around carrying, showing all, like he's walking around with a big bundle of sack, for example. Look at me, look what a great frum guy I am. Parush Nikvi, Zehaman Kifas Raglov. This is somebody who bangs his feet. What does that mean? So there's a few different explanations. Rashi says it means somebody who like walks supposedly very humbly. So like he walks, he takes very small steps, he shuffles along on the ground instead of picking up his feet properly, so therefore he bangs his feet on rocks. The Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that the mankif means that the akif livani ovid mitzvah. It means somebody who says to people, lend me money, I have a mitzvah to do. Like again, like he's trying to show off, I have so much to do, I can't even afford it, so do me a favor and lend me some money. One of the Mepharshim on the Yerushalmi says maybe he borrows it with ribbis. Marsha gives another possibility also about this mankif raglov that it says in our Gemara. The Gemara mentions in Cholin that if a person stubs his toe while he's running to do a mitzvah and blood comes out, that blood is mechaper on him like the blood of a korban oila. So therefore, what does this monk, if Raglov person, what does this potash nikfi do? He stubs his own toes deliberately so people see when he's walking around. In those days, people used to generally walk around barefoot. People see his toes are all banged up and bloody, and they think he's a great tzaddik who's running to do mitzvahs and then banging up his feet. Porosh Kizoi, what is that? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Zeh Makis Dam Laksolim. This is somebody who lets blood on the wall. So Rashi says it's somebody who like pretends that he's walking along, I have to keep my eyes closed, Chas V'Shalom, I should see any women. So therefore he bangs his head against, he ends up banging his head or other body parts against the wall. Yeah, it's sort of like a Chassid Shaita. Yeah, but there's Makis Prushim, we're saying over here, like the wounds of Prushim. Like these guys pretend to be these great Prushim. But Marshall points out, by the way, about all these things, you know, that we're talking about where the person puts on a show. We're not talking about where a person really is on that level, you know, then fine, yeah. So it's a Makis Dam Laksolim, so he ends up letting blood on the walls from walking around like that. Basically, yeah. The Yerushalmi's explanation of Porosh Kizoi, that Tosfos quotes, is that Kizoi is also Meloshin, like balancing out. In modern Hebrew, they have a word Mekazez, like figuring out percentages. That sort of. So like a person, he does a mitzvah, and then he says, okay, he says, like, you know, I'll do this mitzvah, I'll do this aveira, and I'll balance out. Like, you know, I've done a mitzvah, now I have a credit with the Eibush, so now I can go do an aveira. That's a Porosh Kizoi. Porosh Meduchya, what is that? Amar Rabbi Rashila, the Meshapati Meduchya. He's bent over like a Meduchya. Meduchya is a pestle, like you use it to grind things in a mortar. It has like a curved end. So this person, like again, in a very exaggerated way, walks like with a stooped posture. That's the Polish Meduchya.
Stooped,
yeah. Like again, you know, now there is in Shulchan Aruch, it says a person shouldn't walk with his head high, held high. You should walk a little bit stooped because the Eibishter is watching you, but not exaggerated like we're talking about over here.
He does that
again to look like a big tzaddik. The Yerushalmi's gears of it instead of meduchia is min hanechia, like he says, min meloshin likui, meloshin subtracting, like a person who says, you know, I have, you know, I'm always spending my money, I'm always subtracting from my money to be able to do mitzvahs. And again, like showing off how much he's spending on them, basically. The Aruch gives a different explanation, by the way. Meduchia means like he wears his talus in a very exaggerated fashion, like really flaring out on the bottom all over the place, which actually I was thinking maybe that's why our minhag is when we wear a talus, we have to have it come to a point at the bottom, so it's after not, like this. Yeah. Okay, Parosh Machai Vasi Ve'Esena, the next one on the list is, the fifth one is Parosh Machai Vasi Ve'Esena, literally means, what's my obligation, and I'll do it. Question is, what's the problem? Omar Yossi, that's a good thing, he doesn't know. Well, so he's saying, what do I need to do, and let me learn, and I'll do it. Eladama Machai Vasi Tu Ve'Esena. He's saying, what else am I obligated in that I should have to do? In other words, he's implying, like, I've already done everything, like, there's nothing more that I need to do. The Yerushalmi's version that Tosfos quotes is chayvasi is meloshin a chayva, meloshin something that I've done wrong. Like this person says, is there anything that I've done wrong that I should have to do a mitzvah to make up for it, making like as if he has no averus. Then we have then porosh me'ava, porosh me'yira. The porosh me'ava, so Rashi explains, means he has a love for the schar of mitzvahs. He's not doing it out of ava for the Eibishter, he's doing it out of a love for the schar. And porosh me'yira would mean that he's afraid of punishment from the Eibishter. So, Omer le Abaya v'Rava l'Tana, so Abaya and Rava told the Tana in Nir Yeshiva, the Tana like we learned on Amud Aleph, the one who used to teach Paraisis, Loi tisni porosh me'ava, porosh me'yira. You should not include porosh me'ava and porosh me'yira on this list. They don't belong with the other five. The other five are all no goodniks. The porosh me'ava, porosh me'yira is not really so bad. A person should always be involved with doing Torah and mitzvahs, even shaloi lishma. Shematoch shaloi lishma, bal lishma. Because from doing it, shaloi lishma, he'll eventually come to do it lishma. And the explanation of Yechidus, mitoch shaloi lishma, within what he's doing, shaloi lishma, within that, deep down, there's already the lishma, because his nefesh alakis really, really wants to do it for the right thing. It just has a breakthrough, yeah. So therefore, so fine, let him do it, me'ava, from ava, schar, yira, of oynish, at the start, at least. which Tosfos discusses the issue over here about learning Torah. There's places where the Gemara mentions that a person who learns Torah shalom the Shema is a bad thing. Nasis lo samamoves, noach lo shalom nivra, etc. So Tosfos makes the famous distinction over here. We talk about this in various places, also in Rosh Hashanah, in Nazir, in a number of places. But there's a difference between whether in Yevamos also there's a difference whether a person is learning shalom the Shema, like what Rashi says over here, because he wants the reward because he's afraid of punishment from the Eibishter, versus the shalom the Shema we're talking about in those places is where the person is learning Torah or doing mitzvah for bad purposes, to be able to leave goyis for him, to be able to pride himself on them, lakanter, to use it as a method of arguing and showing himself greater than other people, etc. That's the kind of thing that we're saying as opposed to where over here he's doing it because he wants a reward from the Eibishter. Okay, it's not the greatest thing, but it's not so terrible. The Yerushalmi's explanation, by the way, the Porosh Me'ava, Porosh Me'yura, is the Porosh Me'ava is somebody who serves the Eibishter like Avraham Avinu, and the Porosh Me'yura is somebody who serves the Eibishter like Iyov. And the Yerushalmi says, out of these seven, unlike in the Bavli, where we started by saying that all seven are bad, and that's why Abaya and Rava have to take out two of them, the Yerushalmi's version is six of them are bad, the only one who's really good is the Porosh Me'ava, like Avraham Avinu. Amr of Nachum Yitzchok, further on this topic, Dimitamra mitamra, what's hidden is hidden. There's what people do in private, and nobody knows about it except the Eibishter, so it's hidden from human beings. Whatever's revealed to other people is revealed. But ultimately, the Eibishter, the Beit Din Shamayla, knows everything. Therefore, Beit Din Rabba lispera mehanu b'chofu gundi. So let the great Beit Din, meaning the Beit Din Shamayla, punish those who wear a gunda. What is a gunda? Rashi says it means a talus. So it means like somebody who wears a talus and pretends to be this great frum person when really underneath he's not. I don't know. There is, by the way, a story that Yerushalmi mentions it briefly, the Medrash expands on it, of somebody who comes to town Erev Shabbos. He doesn't know anybody in town. He has money with him. He needs somebody trustworthy to store with till after Shabbos. He sees a person shul wearing talus and tefillin, a frum guy. He figures he can put the money away with him. After Shabbos, the guy denies ever having had it. So the traveler is very upset. You know, he turns to the Eibishter. You know, look, I only trusted the guy because he's carrying your name on him, the talus and tefillin. Now what am I going to do? And Eliyahu Navi comes to him and then tells him a way to expose this guy as a fraud that he is, and therefore to get back his money.
He does,
yeah. So that's the Yerushalmi mentions it briefly, and the Sikhtar Absi, I think it is, mentions it in more detail. The Marsha gives another explanation of Gundi. Marsha says that Gundi specifically means black clothes. It wasn't like nowadays where we wear black clothes as a normal thing, especially on Shabbos. In those days, you only wore black if you were in mourning. So you might have mentioned in Bava Basra, for example, that there were people who regularly, I think it's in Bava Basra, who used to regularly wear black clothing out of mourning for the Beis Mikdash. And the Gemara actually mentioned somebody over there, a fellow named Elazar, who one time he was wearing black shoes like that as a symbol of mourning for the Beis Mikdash, and the Reish Galusa's policeman arrested him because they're talking, are you such a great person that you should be ostentatiously mourning for the Beis Mikdash? It turned out that yes, he was. He was taka on that level. But in other words, so the Chofu Gundi over here are the people who pretend like they're such great tzaddikim, they're always mourning for the Beis Mikdash, and therefore wearing black when really, yeah. Having said that, by the way, there is a Chassidus Shavuot that they say that one time somebody came to a Rebbe, I believe I've heard about the Alter Rebbe, but I don't remember, some Rebbe, I don't remember who, and they told him, you have this guy who's, you know, he's making himself out to be this great Chassid, he's davening Barichos and everything, you know, we know that he's not all that. So the Rebbe says, in that case, there should happen to him what it says in the Mishnah. They got a little alarmed, you know. They didn't want the Rebbe to curse him. They just, you know, they wanted him to do something. So what Mishnah? He says at the end of Peah, the Mishnah says that if a person, for example, pretends to be blind or lame or what have you in order like to collect tzedakah, so the Eibishter will arrange that sometime before he dies, the taka ends up being that way. Therefore, if a person pretends to be a chassid, eventually the Eibishter will arrange that sometime during his lifetime, the taka will become. Yeah.
Which Mishnah?
That's the Mishnah at the end of Peah, yeah. Further on this topic, Amalei Yanei Malka Ledveit, say Yanei HaMelech says to his wife, now Yanei HaMelech was descended from the Chashmonaim, but he was quite far from a tzaddik. In fact, the Gemara in Kedushin has a whole story of how he became a tzaddiki and ended up killing many of the Chachamim. he started out as a good guy, but then he went bad. Before he died, Rashi says his wife was afraid that the Chachamim are not going to allow her children to succeed to the throne. Actually, what wound up happening, Josephus tells the story a little differently. He says that after Yanai died, his wife, the famous queen Shlonzion, took over the kingship for the rest of her life. She lived for another 9 years, but she handed over the day-to-day functioning of the government to the Chachamim. So according to that, it would be that she herself was concerned they might not allow her, or whatever. So he tells her, Altis yari min aprushin, don't be afraid of the prushim, meaning the chachamim. V'loim misha einan prushin, don't be afraid of the non-prushim, meaning the tzedukim, because they're my friends. The prushim don't be worried about, because they're tzedukim, Rashi says. Your children didn't do anything bad to them, they're not going to punish them because of me. The tzedukim you don't have to worry about because they're my friends. Elam, I mean, that's tzruyin, but you need to worry about the hypocrites. Shadoimin the Prussian, who look like Prussian. Tzvurim means hypocrites. Tzvurim literally means colored ones. So it means the ones who, like, they have a coat of paint. They have a coat of paint, but the underneath is in. Shemasen k'masi Zimri. They act like what Zimri did. Umavachin tzchakab, meaning the Roshayim. Umavachin tzchakab Pinchas, but they're looking for a reward like what Pinchas got. So those are the kind of people you have to be careful of. The different Mefarshim talk about him. And so if we're saying over here that these are people who do Avera secretly, what's the point of the comparison to Zimri? He does Avera in full view of everybody. So there's a number of different answers. One of them is that Zimri also tried to pretend like it's Al-Pi Halacha, where Rashi says at the end of Parshas Balak that he takes Kozbi, he comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, Zuasura Imatera, says this one, and she also to me your mother. You're going to argue she's also fine, you know, you married the daughter of Yisrael, right? So therefore I have a justification, Al-Pi Halacha, for what I'm doing. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Yeah.